Hey everyone, Zachary Dash here, and welcome to episode 3 of the Around the Block video and podcast series. So, got a really cool guest today. His name is Paul R. Berg on Twitter, goes by Paul, and I have followed Paul's journey for the past probably 2 years. Every single tweet that he has, well, maybe not every single one, but for the most part, whenever I see Paul tweet, it adds a little extra thought and intrigue, and I like to dive deeper into what he finds interesting. So, Paul has created something called Sabalier, and if you ever get paid by your employer, usually your employer will pay you maybe twice a month. If you're lucky, you'll get paid maybe once a week. Well, Sabalier actually allows the instant streaming of payments to your wallet. So imagine if your salary, if you got paid second by second, and at any point in time, you could take that money and go do whatever you needed with. Such a cool technology and a cool concept that we dive deeper in on this interview. So a lot of people in the industry, they think of a potential solution without thinking of the problem at the core of it. And so what I think Paul is really, really good at in all of the technology that he's creating is to start with the problem first, and let's find a solution and putting in the time and energy to actually listen to your users. So talk about a lot of cool things in this interview. One of the things, there was a bug back in a long time ago on Sabalier where he talks about just the importance of transparency. Whenever those things happen, how do you react to them, and how do you communicate those things to your vision, to your community, that people can actually listen to? So he talks about how hard it is in crypto, especially, to focus on one product, and some tips and tricks he adds to if you are having trouble with kind of ADHD of creativity, how to kind of block those out. And one of the most interesting parts, I think, of this interview for me was that Sabalier was actually acquired by a company called Mainframe. They have mainframe.com, which is a really cool domain. I think really, really awesome that they were able to get that. But the most interesting part to me about this acquisition is, and Leah, the interviewer of this series, you know, kind of brings up this point. In the traditional world, you know, companies get acquired pretty often, but we don't see that as much in crypto. And so Paul opens up about that process and in his decision early on. You know, crypto projects can really go the token route, where you create a token and, you know, some liquidity mining, or kind of create an open source product. And so Paul made a very intentional thought and decision at the early stages to go with this open source product that ultimately obviously has worked out for them. They got acquired by Mainframe, so they can continue the brand and can continue the development. So anyways, super awesome interview. Again, this video series is led by Leah Thompson, and really hope that you guys enjoy it. Let us know in the comments if you have any questions for Paul, and I'll see you guys soon. Bye. Around the Block is presented by Block Zero Labs, a startup studio made for the decentralized world. From logo to launch, we build experimental projects with our community of over 5,000 citizens. If you'd like to help us create, launch, and own the next generation of decentralized startups, go to blockzerolabs.io, become a citizen, and check out some of the cool things we're building.
Well, Paul, thank you so much for coming on the show, being part of Around the Block. I'm really excited to not only learn more about Sabalier, but also just about you and your journey into crypto, and kind of get to pick your brain on building a business within the crypto space. So, Paul, thanks so much for taking the time to come on the show today.
Hey, and very glad to be here, and thank you for the invite.
So I always like to start off with just getting to hear a little bit more about what brought people into this crazy crypto world that we all live in now. And so tell us a little bit more about Paul pre-crypto. What were you doing, and what was kind of your entry to get into crypto that's kind of led you here today?
Sure. And I will answer that in a bit, but before I make an amendment to that and say that I think it's more interesting to answer not just what got me into crypto, but like what made me stay. Yeah, and I think it's a subtle difference, right? Because many people come into crypto, many people, you know, just buy Bitcoin and then shill it on Twitter, you know, a billion of time. But it's more interesting to hear what was that, the spark that made you you know, stay here 24/7. So,
yeah.
You know, I was building startups, like tech startups before. I was writing specifically like iOS apps. And, you know, being a developer, I found out about Ethereum in early 2017. I found out about smart contracts. And I'm one of those weird people that first got into Ethereum after, like before Bitcoin. So I first owned Ether and then I bought Bitcoin. So I'm pretty proud about that, you know, being in Ethereum full time now. But yeah, I mean, that was it. I remember I was in the Starbucks during the times when we could do that, right? And I wrote my first contract and I was able to do like this mini bank, right? And the concept of like spinning up my own bank while at Starbucks was super powerful to me. And yeah, since then I've been full-time in the space.
Oh, I think that's such a like beautiful distinction of not just what got you into the space, but what kind of was that hook, what made you stay? Because that's something I wanted to ask you about as well, is when did you know that you wanted to jump full-time into crypto? Like, was it a sudden like, yes, this is it? Like, what was that moment like, or was it a gradual kind of transition?
No, it was very sudden. So as I said, I was there at Starbucks, and when I saw it, I was like, I just love this. obviously, I couldn't predict that it would be like a really full-time thing, but definitely that moment, I was like, this is what I want to keep exploring for a while. And you know, things like one thing led to another, and there you go.
So I know that a lot of people, you know, we just talked about, they get into the space, they kind of start dabbling around, maybe they go full time into crypto and they start working in the industry. But then there's a whole other layer of starting your own project and founding and building something from the ground up. And so what was your kind of motivation and inspiration to start Sablier, and what was that process like?
So the idea for Sablier came later down the line. I first, you know, started with contract and working on like various open source things and working for others as like a contractor. But then I joined Aztec, which is this like privacy protocol on Ethereum. And only then I ended up, you know, quitting my job and starting up like Sablier. And, yeah, should I first talk about that initial phase, or do you want me to jump into Sablier?
Yeah, I want to hear about that. Yeah, kind of that like moment, like how did you get started? Because I feel like it's difficult to even know where to start once you have an idea. And so what were those like beginning building blocks, and what were the early days like, and what did you guys do?
Sure. Yeah, well, I started from the problem, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that is common. I could be wrong, but I don't think that is common in this space. Like many people start from, you know, from I want to do something. But in my case, I was delayed my payroll a couple of times. And, you know, I thought, you know, I know how to write contracts. And contracts don't have this arbitrary monthly recurring payment. It's right. Just not a main feature. Like time is continuous, right? Mm-hmm. And that was the main idea. I wanted to build a payroll system that was continuous, so I can always request that as my preferred payroll option. And as we speak, I'm being paid through Sablier right now. So
nice.
from that perspective, the project was a success. But yeah, so after I had the idea, you know, I thought, how can I get some funding for that? Because audits are expensive, and you know, like that's how the story goes in Ethereum. So I said, let's first like build a beta so that people see the concept, that it's not like a mirage or like a crazy idea in my head. And I had this beta that worked. I had like 30 users, something like that. It was like a basic React app, and I coded a contract with Truffle. That's what I had at the time in 2018. Mm-hmm. You know, it worked. Funny enough, I had a bug, so I had to close that beta. Well, no audit, right? Like that's like how these things go. But then I ended up meeting Rich from MakerDAO, and he liked the idea, and he gave me a grant, so I could finally quit my job and found my co-founder, and then we shipped a more proper and much more like safe Sablier version 1.
So I love that you just touched on the fact, I mean, I don't love that this happened for you, but I love that you touched on the fact that you guys had a bug and you had to, like, all of this hard work was just suddenly like out the window. Can you dive into that a little bit more and how you were able to kind of keep going and decide to keep building and start back up? Like, walk us through that. Like, that must have just been such a heartbreaking moment.
Yes. I mean, thankfully, we didn't lose money for our users because I put my white hat on and saved the money for everybody and told everybody what happened. But yeah, it was a shock because, you know, contracts are not changeable. So I remember I was walking down the street and it suddenly came to mind that there was an issue with the message sender property. And oh, wait, that shouldn't have been the case. And I ran home and, you know, told everybody what happened. But then it's just a matter of, you know, focusing on the next steps, mm-hmm. acknowledging what happened. I think it's very important to be transparent about it. So mm-hmm. I've seen people or teams that they first want to, you know, even after they rescued the money and it's clear what happened, they still don't want to publish the information about, about the hack. I think that's very important. Like, try to be as transparent as possible. And, you know, it took 3 or 4 months until we went back to whiteboard and redesigned the contract and the UI. But yeah, we did it and we shipped it eventually.
Mm. So I think that, you know, one of the most helpful things that someone can hear when they're thinking about starting their own business or their own project in the crypto space is just to hear other people's stories. And so it's been really interesting to just have you kind of walk us through how you started building Sabliar and like some of the, you know, roadblocks that you had in the beginning. What advice would you give to someone that is thinking about starting their own project here in the crypto space?
It's a good but a broad question.
Totally. Take it whichever direction you want.
I would start with I'm a technical person. I can only talk from the perspective of a technical founder. Mm-hmm. And what I would do is I would try to not reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. The state of Ethereum development in late 2020 is much more thorough and much more well designed than it was in 2019 even. So I would look at what other people did before me. Mm. I would look at what templates you have. Spoiler alert, I have my own templates. But even that aside, like, there are many protocols that have, you know, billions of dollars in their contracts. I would just look at what they did. Try to, you know, fork or copy and paste their code. Usually in the traditional finance or like the startup world, people are not necessarily encouraging copy pasting other people's code because it's not fair or something, but here it makes sense because you want to reuse those people's efforts and their secure building blocks. So that's it for the tech part. But then on business, you know, I would just try to I don't think that the startup advice that Ethereum entrepreneurs should receive is different to what normal startup entrepreneurs should get. Mm-hmm. It's kind of similar, right? You have to talk to users. Don't live in your own world. Right. Get outside, get a Twitter account. It's super helpful. Try to get on Twitter, get advice from people, put your name and your project and your idea out there and take risks. It's pretty similar in that, from that perspective. Yeah.
So I think that, you know, you've worked in the startup world for a long time and there's always a lot of moving pieces. And I think that's more true in crypto and blockchain, maybe than even other sectors where things are just changing at the speed of light, it seems. And there's always new shiny objects and things that you could be paying attention to. So at like Sabliar, like as a company, like how do you guys just stay focused on what you're doing and what you're working on? I know this is something that you and Zachary talked about in the pre-chat, and I wanted to pick your brain on that a little bit because it can be really hard, I think, to like hone in and focus on what you're trying to build. Can you kind of talk through your thoughts on that and maybe why that's important and how people can maybe not get so distracted by all the different things happening?
This is such a good point, and I'm glad that you brought it because it's just so true. Like in crypto, like so many things happen. And I sometimes get the impression that, everybody is just staying on Twitter 24/7 and not doing anything.
It's kind of true sometimes.
Yeah, and it's hard to resist it because you're kind of like pulled in that social world all the time. Like mm-hmm. there's an exploit that just happened or like a new shiny project.
Yes.
So what I personally do, and I actually tweeted about this a couple of times, is I'm trying to resist modernity. And I'm using a couple of heuristics. So my phone is in do not disturb mode 24/7, except when I have to get a package. except for that case, it's always in do not disturb mode. I'm keeping my laptops and everything away from my bedroom. Super, super helpful because you can sleep better and so on. You know, just common sense that I think we kind of lose it when the crypto markets are 24/7 open. But yeah, I think they're super important. So just try to find your inner peace sometimes and get away from the notifications world and focus on your project, like write code or talk to users.
Such good advice. And honestly, something I've been working on myself too, that I struggle with it. Like you said, it's easy just to get pulled in all these directions. But then at the end of the day, you're like, what did I get done? And so I'm kind of curious, I want to pivot a little bit and talk about the acquisition. So SaveLayer was just recently acquired by Mainframe. Yep. And I feel like that's a really not totally unique kind of setup, but it is in a way. Like, we don't hear about a lot of mergers and acquisitions and things like that in the crypto space as much as I think we do in more traditional markets. And so I'd love to hear just from you, like, how that process went. I don't know how much you can actually share, but just kind of walk us through that and what that looks like.
Sure. And to follow up on your point, that is correct. We don't see these things happening because firstly, the market is small, you know, it's young,
right.
But instead of that, many people, so I think there are two big approaches that you can take as like a founder. You either go the token route where, you know, have liquidity mining or you have right. something like that and you become a protocol on your own. Or you're taking the slightly more traditional approach where you're a centralized business, but your products are open source.
Right.
And I chose the latter because I never found a suitable token model for SaveLayer and I didn't want to do it just because we wanted to have a token, right?
Right.
And because we were centralized from this, you know, development point of view or like business point of view, we always had the option to sell it to somebody who was interested. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the time we were running out of cash. So the opportunity came along and we said, you know, this is the best way forward. Like, we can continue maintaining the project and the brand by accepting the offer from Mainframe. And the setup is that now I'm part of a team. So I'm working on the contract for our zero coupon bonds protocol. And, you know, what is interesting is that given that we now have like SaveLayer as part of the team, there are many ways or a couple of ways in which we could even integrate them in the long term, right? Like, I love the idea of, you know, using streams to like borrow against them and get a loan against that. Sounds like a very futuristic DeFi use case, but in theory, it sounds possible, doable.
That's a perfect segue into the next question I wanted to ask you because, you know, lending platforms, I think, are a really big topic in the crypto world right now. And so what differentiates SaveLayer from other lending platforms on the market right now?
Oh, sure. So like SaveLayer is not a lending platform. We are just like a payment provider, like a payment app. The bigger organization, you know, Mainframe, has pivoted to like a bonds protocol, like a zero coupon bonds protocol where we have like fixed rate loans
right.
with that expire at certain dates. And that what you said is correct. Like, there are many lending platforms. We are differentiating ourselves through the fact that our loans are fixed rate and fixed term. And we also have some interesting ideas for how you can become what is called a guarantor. So you can guarantee money for people and make liquidations automatically. But that's, I digressed. I wanted to make the distinction between the SaveLayer product for payments in general and Mainframe, the platform for loans.
Perfect. No, thanks for breaking that all down. I think that especially when people that are kind of newer in the crypto space, they see all these different projects and options, and trying to differentiate and delineate the differences between them can sometimes be a little bit nuanced. So thanks for breaking that all down. And so one of the things that I wanted to ask you about as well, because we were just talking about the importance of focus and you know, kind of putting your attention into working on one thing. Like, what are you guys working on now? What is the team excited about, and what are you guys working on?
We're finishing up the protocol, and I am excited about it because I think we have a very solid foundation. We have very good testing. We have very, very good coverage. Mm. We just finished our audit, and you know, I don't have a date for our launch of the protocol, but that's exciting. We are also working on the UI, which looks good. That's what I can say about it until now. And you know, we will connect the UI with the contracts soon, and we will ship them. So that's what we're working on.
So one of my favorite questions to ask people, because I feel like, you know, we all talk crypto all day long, is what is exciting you and interesting you outside of the world of crypto? Like, what are you, like, what's kind of maybe a fun hobby you have or something that you're learning about right now?
It's a very good question. I think we all should have some kind of like non-crypto hobby, just because there's much more, you know, happening in the world than that. Mm-hmm. Well, I've been fascinated by, you know, the OpenAI thing with their innovation on how is it called, G something, I forget the name, but anyways, they were like building this like natural language processing tool that could spit out articles that looked like written by humans.
Oh,
interesting, and you know, super smart. And there are so many applications for that. Like, you can reprogram the same algorithm to build websites for people, and you just input your website description in plain English, and that algorithm will spit out a React app. You know? So that is cool. Besides that, I'm also very much into I'm trying to become better at physics. I'm trying to catch up with everything that is happening in that space.
Right.
You know, like, you have Stephen Wolfram, who just proposed like a new scientific explanation that seems to be merging quantum mechanics with relativity, right? Which is pretty crazy. Like, if he actually manages to finish the theory, and those are two very big topics outside of crypto that I think more people should read about.
Ah, that's so interesting. That's especially, I mean, the first one you were talking about, I'm like, man, I could think of so many ways that would be helpful to like have something that can just like generate articles and websites. Like, that's amazing. So to kind of close out, one question that I like to ask people that I think is kind of it's just a fun open-ended question is, if you could change one thing about the crypto space, what would it be and why? I know it's a big question.
I will answer it, but not before I confirm. So the OpenAI thing was called GPT.
GPT. Oh, okay.
It was pretty viral in a couple of, like, this year at some point. Mm. Anyways, what would I change about crypto?
Yeah, just about the industry or the community or the, like, however you want to take that.
Well, I think we need more norms.
Mm.
I know it's a boring point and something that like a regulator would say, but you know, if you really want to scale technology to the whole world, we can't live on crypto Twitter forever. like we need you know, we need more rules or like stuff like, what should we do when there is some bug in your contracts? And I think this should be like both a push and pull from the powers that be. Like, we should communicate more with them maybe, and eventually to be able to ship this technology to more people than are using today. So that's one point. But then on the more bottom-up side, what I would do is I would make founders read more. So I had this hunch that, coming back to the same point, you know, with what you said, that everybody's plugged into Twitter all the time. And there's so much emphasis on news. Like, you know, there are so many newsletters that I can just keep up with. And, and I think that a lot of the knowledge that is underpinning like this new project or like protocols can be found in old books, right? Like, I mean, biologically, we're not that different from humans 2000 years ago.
Right.
So there are essentially proofs or ideas that could influence your behavior or like thinking outside of crypto, right? I come back to this point again. So reading books, I think, is something somewhat underrated in the founder sphere. And that's something that I would change. I would have people more calm, you know, and more more bookworm-ish.
Oh, I love that answer, because I think you're right. There's this, you know, there's so much going on all the time. We're just trying to keep up. Like, people maybe aren't necessarily taking the time to invest in their own knowledge, which is, it's been so fun getting to chat with you and kind of get to know you a little bit more, because that's like clearly something that's very important to you. You know, the way that you answered, like, the things you're doing for fun, you're learning about physics. You know, I love that. And, so it's been so awesome, Paul, to get to chat with you and get to just get to know you better. Like, I think that, you know, a lot of interviews focus more on just the project and just the tech and just the roadmap and things like that. But I think that getting to know the faces that go with these projects and their stories and getting to hear people's stories is really important. Like, I loved your Starbucks story. Like, that's just such a great like entry to crypto story. And so, Paul, thank you so much for being a guest on Around the Block. We really appreciate your time and for coming on and just sharing with all of us.
I thank you too. Yeah, it was great to take a break from work and, you know, just have a chat. And thanks.